semi-finals time in the Heineken Champions Cup, with Newcastle the destination for this weekend's victorious teams. Leinster and Toulouse traded wins in Pool 1, and the competition's two most successful sides now face off again, this time for a place in the final. Meanwhile, Munster stand in the way of Saracens in the showpiece, with the Irish province looking to inflict a first European defeat of the season on Mark McCall's men. We'll discuss those matches and look ahead to the last four in the European Rugby Challenge Cup 2. That's all to come on the Champions Rugby Show. Welcome to the show with me, James Burridge. I'm joined once again by Tom May, once of Toulon, Northampton and Newcastle. And he's alongside the former England hooker, George Shooter, who played in two European Cup finals for Leicester. George, great to have you.
Good evening.
Tell me about those finals. Tell me what it's like to play in a European final.
Well, we lost both of them, so straight away, it's not that memorable. It's a great occasion. We played one in Edinburgh, one in Twickenham. And just a whole week build up to it was great. I still remember it now. I still remember the sort of not so much the nerves and the tension, but actually just sort of realizing you're in a massive game like that, and you've worked how hard you've worked to get there. Probably actually winning the semi-finals are far more memorable occasions than the finals. Not only because I lost them, but the actual feeling that you've really achieved something already by getting to a final. It was disappointing. We were second best on both days to Leinster and Wasps at Twickenham. So there's no regrets in that respect. But yeah, the whole build-up was fantastic. Loads of experienced players were feeling the sort of the pressure and all that, and training had a bit of an extra edge to it. And the games themselves were both pretty good games as well, to be honest, despite being on the wrong side of it.
And always at this time of year, Tom, the weather plays its part, doesn't it? Because you can have firmer pitches, better weather. It really adds the sense of occasion, doesn't it?
Well, it does, but if you're playing indoors like Racing, it doesn't make a difference, James.
But they're out of it, Thomas.
Yes, very true. Look, I think some of the sides that are left in the competition, they are some of the most expansive sides that we're going to see. Saracens, I mean, you wouldn't exactly call Saracens expansive, but their ability to pull opportunities together and run tries in for fun. Leinster and Toulouse, you know, they have some of the best attacking players that we've seen in European rugby for a long time, I think. So, you know, I think it is that time of year, and you do get the feeling that everything's coming to a bit of a head, and it's an exciting point in the season.
And we had four fabulous quarterfinals. George, was there one for you which stood out?
Oh, they were cracking games, weren't they? All four of them. Proper sort of test match intensity. I guess if you pushed me, I'd have to take one of the derbies. Leinster Ulster was probably the pick of the bunch, although the Racing Toulouse game was crazy as well. I think that Irish game was just proper test match intensity. Guys really putting themselves on the line. The first 20 minutes was unbelievably quick and loads of big collisions. Just everything you want to see from two massively committed teams and two very, very skillful teams, has to be said as well. So that's probably the pick of the quarters for me. Just.
And for Jacob Stockdale, oh my God, Tom. I mean, just
a moment. It was a Freddie Burns moment.
It was. Was it worse than Freddie Burns? Because of the stage.
No, at least he wasn't celebrating.
Yeah.
Yes, good point. That's true.
No, rugby's got a horrible way of making you learn quickly. And I think he said since then, you know, you learn the hard way. But he'd done so much in the build-up to that try to actually get to that point of putting the ball down.
And did you see the video of that ball kid in the aftermath of that, of him? He was drinking from a cup. I can't believe neither
of you
have seen
this. I thought you said bald
kid then. No, the bald kid.
Well, I thought you were talking about George.
I'm saving that for later in the game. He was literally looking down at his cup of tea, dipping in a biscuit, looked up, and he saw Stockdale running towards him, and he had the best view of the no try ever. It was like you were making this up. I couldn't quite believe it.
Quietly had a word in his ear. He stood up.
Put it down properly here, idiot.
One of these balmy moments, one of the highlights, well, lowlights, I suppose. Let's look at the social media. We asked you ahead of the show, who's been the unsung hero for your team in the Heineken Champions Cup this season and why? Oliver Gordon on Instagram says, Eric O'Sullivan of Ulster. How about that, fellas? If there is an unsung hero, and they don't tend to get talked about much for obvious reasons, who would you pick out, George?
Oh, that's a very good question. I'll have to check on Instagram. it's funny, actually. I do think, and this will sound strange, I think Leinster have actually got a lot of guys who don't do a lot of really obvious stuff, if you see what I mean. That makes sense. And they've got a lot of internationals, obviously. But I think they're actually the best sort of team in terms of working together and working as a unit. So actually, you don't see them winning them games individually. All their victories seem to be come through hard work and good teamwork, whether it's a driving maul or whether it's a good passage of open play. So I guess they're not unknowns as such. But I just think that for a top side, they're just a real solid unit and don't rely on individuals in particular.
Absolutely. We'll be reading out more of your answers later in the show. Twitter at Champions Cup is how you can contact us. You can search for European Rugby Champions Cup on Facebook and at European Rugby Champions Cup on Instagram.
This is the Champions Rugby Show.
Semi-finals weekend in the Heineken Champions Cup kicks off with Saracens against Munster at the Ricoh Arena in Coventry. 2008, many will remember. George and Tom, that one was a day Ronan O'Gara will remember for great reasons. And I just wonder how much, George, start with you, it being at the Ricoh will actually help Munster, because the fans will travel, it'll be a sea of red, and that will give them a fighting chance.
Yeah, absolutely. And traditionally, they've been one of the best teams on the road in the European Cup. They've won, I think they were the first team to win an away semi-final and an away quarter-final and things like that. And they do seem to thrive on that siege mentality that you have to have when you go away. And you're dead right, the Ricoh will be full of, it's about 35,000 people at Old, 35,000. Saracens technically down the road, but I guess the Munster fans do love a travel. I'm sure it will be almost feel like a toe and park to them.
And with under Van Graham, Tom, two semi-finals since he's taken charge there. What's missing from Munster?
I think they've got. Well, I talked about the expansive nature of the teams in the semi-finals, and Munster are probably that side that are the odd one out. They're a lot more direct. They're a lot more pragmatic about the way they play the game. A lot more physical. That's a physical focus, I think, from Munster. And I think they have to try and add something on the back of that. You know, if you're going to be really physical and beat teams up, then you need to have the ability to try and have an expansive game to then swing the ball wide off the back of it. They're quite direct in the backs, very big in the midfield. They have got players like Keith Earls that can pull something out of nothing. But I think that's the area that they're probably going to try and develop their game moving forward.
Because you look at the two teams, George, Munster, suffocating defence, ferocious. They can almost play with little ball and just counterpunch and counterpunch. Sarri's used to be accused of doing that. They can probably be a bit more expansive. Yeah. You've got two very interesting teams going mano a mano, haven't you, really? Psychologically and tactically, how do you play this game?
Well, you've just got to play your game. There's no sense in playing around and trying to change your game on the hoof in the middle of a season. And what's got them to this point is exactly what Maisie's saying there, is the way they've played. That's their style. That suits the guys they've got. Now, whether it will be successful in the long run, who knows? Saracens evolved and turned into far more all-court surface team, if you like. And they've been very successful with that. I think Munster will be developing as well. Like I say, they're only 2 years into Van Graham's reign, and he probably has an idea of where they want to go. And I'm sure they'll want to throw the ball around. But you have to score tries. You have to score points these days at the top end of Europe. You can't grind every team into the dirt. And at some point, you've got to have a bit of variety in your game. But like I say, you just got to go out there. You've got to a semi-final doing what you do, both sides. You don't want to be changing too much now. You just got to focus on doing what you do well.
I think their problem there is that, like George says, they don't score that many tries. Saracens, on the flip side, scored 10 in the quarter-final, and they're 30 tries in this tournament already. So if they don't score, if they don't find ways to score themselves, you can't hold Saracens out for a whole game. They're going to score. And they're very good at taking the few opportunities they get and converting those.
And they need a playmaker, Munster, to try and loosen the shackles, and it's unlikely they're going to have Carberry. So they turn again to Blyndal or Hanrahan, and do they have really the pedigree of a 10 at this level of the competition?
I think Blyndal's done well over the past few years. I think he's more than capable of handling himself in this competition. But like George says, you can't change the structure of your team. You can't change the systems that you've been developing over a period of time. You almost build your team up, then you put the next block on, and then you secure that, tie that down, then add bits to your game. And I think it's a lot longer, the building process, than going, right, we've got that right, now let's go to point Z on the list.
I've asked this question pretty much every podcast this season and the one before that. How do you unlock Saracens, George? You've played against them so many times.
Yeah, you just got to be patient. I think what people tend to do is they think, oh, the Saracens are going to score. They're going to be on the front foot a lot. We've got to go and beat them to the punch. Actually, you just got to go through the phase. You've got to be patient. You've got to take the opportunities when they arise. You don't get many, so you've got to be clinical and you've got to take them when they come. They're not unbeatable. They've lost a lot of games this year, particularly away from home in the Premiership. They haven't lost, obviously, in Europe to date. But they are a beatable team. They're only human, so I think teams get a bit sort of antsy after four or five phases. Oh, we haven't scored, we haven't broken the line. Just keep hold of it, have that patience. No team can defend for 15, 20 phases consistently. At some point, you're going to get an opportunity to break a line or even score a try. But like I said, I think Saracens are just very good at smothering people, and then everyone gets a panic on. We've got to do something. They end up kicking the ball away or forcing a turnover, forcing the ball for an offload and turning it over. So I think just patience, really. They are beatable, definitely.
I think that I do agree with George. They are beatable. The thing that teams have to improve on that Saracens are brilliant at, if they make a mistake or they kick poorly, they're punished so badly that actually they don't get to make those errors again because they're already down on the scoreboard. And that's where probably other teams need to improve, is really punishing the mistakes that other teams make.
Both love to box kick. And they've got two of the best exponents of it in the game, if Wriggleworth starts, and Spencer himself. I mean, he's really come into his own and may even get on the tour of Japan to the World Cup with England. So the box kick has just come into the game increasingly. It's like the new set piece, isn't it, George?
It is, yeah.
As a forward, do you not just think, oh, God, here we go again?
They love it, because that means they're in a ruck or
no,
a scrum.
They don't kick it far enough for me. If you're going to kick a ball, you've got to kick it as far as you can, and then we'll chase it. It's become a massive part of the game. You see it at every level of the game now, and people box kicking from the opposition 10-metre line even. It's unheard of a few years ago. You've got the ball, you want to keep holding it. But now, I guess, the thing is, get rid of the ball, put them under pressure, make them make mistakes.
And who's got the better box kick then, Saracens or Munster?
I'd probably go with Sarries myself.
Yeah. Wigglesworth core skills.
Well, either of them, frankly.
Well, yeah. I'm not, I wasn't saying the other one was bad.
Yeah.
I was just saying, his core skills are fantastic, which is why they've got a great balance between him and Spencer. So to start the game with Wigglesworth is a great thing to have in your armoury, but then bring that on with the variety that Spencer brings to the.
Why is it so effective, though?
Because they chase it. Watching the game Friday night, the Leicester Falcons game, there was so much kicking in that and so much poor chasing. So there were a couple of times fullbacks were getting man and ball or Floody got man and ball to a pretty big degree. But more often than not, and particularly watching Leicester this year, they're kicking and they're kicking poorly and they're chasing poorly as well. So all you're doing is you're giving the opposition ball back in often kicking into the midfield as well, which is a no-no for me. And then there's no chase, so you're just giving them the ball, letting them run at you and set up again. Munster and Sarries, their chase is phenomenal. You can see it is a little bit structured where they get the tail on the ruck and use it nine. But then that's for a reason. They've got three people in and around the ball chasing it. Usually one of the wingers, someone like Short Maitland, is fantastic on the high ball. And then there's guys around it sweeping up the tap forwards or tap backs rather from both sides. So, yeah, a kick's only as good as its chase, and those two teams are pretty damn good at it.
So, Tom, what is Sarries' style now? I mean, 2 years ago they beat Munster at the Aviva. Has their game changed since that game, since that season, since 2017?
I'd say at the moment they're probably not as strong as they were back then, in terms of results and how maybe the other teams have caught up with them. I don't think you can actually say that they have a style. It's not like you'd say, right, Munster, they're direct, they're physical.
Do you need an identity, though, at this time of the season?
I think they've got an identity. I think they pride themselves at being very, very good at the things that you don't need to be good at, if you see what I mean. Just takes effort, graft, mindset, all that sort of stuff. They're all brilliant at it, but then they've got world-class players on top of that that can pull something out of nothing.
Yeah. They didn't have Liam Williams 2 years ago, did they? He's not on the list for Player of the Year, which is incredible. I think he's just taken his game to a completely new level this year. I thought he was good last year.
The box kick as well, the way he almost leaps like a fish, doesn't he?
He's incredible. And before the Lions tour to New Zealand, I thought, this guy's going to be a Test Lion. And since then, his game's gone from strength to strength. I think he's phenomenal at the moment. He's and that's, again, like I said, he's one of those guys that maybe said they can do the X factor, but also he'll chase all his lost causes, he'll get the ball back, and he's a deadly finisher, absolutely deadly. And bringing guys like him into what Saracens had before has made them a slightly different team, and they've got a bit more, well, like I said, they've got an all-court game now. They can play a tight game and grind people down, or they can fling the ball around and give it to guys like Maitland and
Well, they can make breaks like Liam Williams did on that Lions tour that we all remember. Mm. Saracens can pull that out now. Right, whereas 2 years ago they probably would have just shooed that downfield and got back up the field with the kick chase.
Well, I'm delighted to say we can speak to the former Ireland and Lions centre Rob Henderson, who has both won and lost European Cup finals with Munster, and they played each other 2 years ago. Rob, does that count for anything?
First of all, evening, lads.
Evening.
Completely different match this time round. You've got Saris, who have been one of the beacons of European rugby, stalling of late in the Premiership. Munster, who have clearly not been playing extremely well in the Pro 14, but have somehow managed to contrive victories. You've got recent pedigree against constant history, playing above in the Rico. It's a fascinating game ahead of us at the weekend.
Rob, we've talked about Munster and how they're quite direct, they're very physical in here in the podcast. We're just wondering what Munster need to add to their game to take it to the next level.
In fairness, there's a couple of things that need to happen. Munster need to play to the top of their game. Good players, some great players across the paddock. Saris have got an unbelievable squad. Saris are setting the benchmark. I was fortunate enough to have a dinner with Nigel Ray recently, and him looking to embed and leave a legacy behind for the Saracens rugby team is something that is paramount within himself, within McCall, within the squad. This Munster side aren't man for man the better side, but the collective unity they have and the team spirit and the history that comes with the European Cup, somehow they grind results out when they shouldn't win. I've been involved in matches that we've lost when we should have won, some really important games that we've won when we didn't have a chance. And I think at the Rico against Saris, everything is going to have to go well for the Munster side to be able to compete with Saracens.
Hendo, it's Shoots here, mate. How are you?
Hi, Shoots. How are you?
Yeah, good, mate. You said you went out to dinner with Nigel Ray. Did you pay?
Of course not. Don't we? I've got loads of dough.
Absolutely. What can you just give us an insight as to what the competition means to Munster? You said the history, obviously it's well documented how many times they've won it and been in finals, and it's been a real love affair between Munster and the European Cup. What does it mean to people and players, I guess, as well, just to be successful in this tournament?
To be honest, having failed in 2000, failed in 2002 or 2004, and won the cup for the first time in 2006. It's not just part of the team culture; it's part of the entire province. You've got six counties that are behind these guys, and in fairness, you've got a lot of people from other counties that are Munster fans, just because they put everything on the line every time they play to win the European Cup again, especially this year. With the way that the national team has performed, this could elevate expectation for the World Cup. But let's narrow it down just to Munster. Elsie is currently a beacon of that side. I think if Munster win the European Cup this year, then this would be as great an achievement as anything that's gone in the previous 20 years. Mm.
And Rob, we talked a moment ago about how Van Graan's taken them to two semi-finals in Europe. What do you think is missing? And tell me about the semi-final feeling, because it's different, isn't it? Because you know that there is so much potential, one more big game to come. How do you prepare for a semi-final?
Well, the lads will probably tell you. You've done all the hard work during the season. You've done all the hard work during the pool games. Come through a quarter-final. No one really remembers anyone that lost a semi-final. If you get through to a final, then it's a toss of a coin in the day. I mean, there are four fantastic teams left at the competition. Both sides are playing away. The Rico Arena, fantastic stadium. And I think Munster has done brilliantly to pull that together, by the way. But semi-finals are huge. These are the ones you definitely don't want to lose. I've played in a few of them. I've lost my fair share. But to get to a semi-final stage and lose is the most deflating thing in your entire season. So whichever team loses the semi-final, I mean, it's going to be a big... They'll need a big shot in the arm to pick themselves up for the rest of the domestic season. I just think that this weekend, obviously, Saracens are favourite. They're on home soil, if not a home stadium. But Munster are a side that can pull it out of anywhere. And granted, Saris may have better players, per se, on paper across the paddock. But this Munster side, the coach is instilling his own. It's great to see that they've signed him up for another 3 years, by the way. But to have this Munster side going into a semi-final with an opportunity for yet another European final, the boys won't leave anything on the table. They'll put everything into the game. And as I say, it's a bouncing ball, it's the weather, it's the referee, and it's the way the opposition play. I've got my fingers crossed for a Munster win.
Rob, great to have you on the pod. Thanks very much indeed. Enjoy the matches this weekend.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks, lads.
Cheers, Andrew.
So to prediction time. The game Saturday, the 20th of April at 1500 BST for Sarries Munster at the Ricoh Arena in Coventry on BT Sport and BN Sports. George, let's start with you. Where's this game going to end up?
I think Sarries will just have it. It's one of those, I'd love to sit on the fence. That's not why I'm here. but I just think, like we said, Saracens have just got a bit more of an all-court game. They've got momentum in Europe. They know how to win these games. They've been in finals and won finals fairly recently, whereas I know Munster have as well. But I think they're a slightly different evolution of their team, for want of a better term, I suppose. So I think Saracens, but sneaky. It'd be close.
Tom?
I think their frontline players rested. Saracens will be too strong for Munster.
Just on the predictions from the quarterfinal, you beat Florian Ross in year 3-2.
Really? Yeah, I know.
That's only because he refused to bet against his old side.
Well, if you turn down points, what
an idiot.
What sort of game are you playing it? Ridiculous.
And a note here from producer Danny, who says this week's predictions, they're going to count the result to the Challenge Cup semis as well.
Right.
So you've got more points to play for. Now, as we record the show, there are still a few tickets available for both semi-finals, so don't miss your chance to be at one of these huge continental clashes if you can. And we asked you ahead of the show on social media, who's been the unsung hero for your team in the Heineken Champions Cup this season and why? Marion on Facebook says Will Skelton of Saracens. That's a good shout. And Munster fans have been in touch on Twitter. Kevin Lynch says the one and only Keith Earls. Ewan Heap says Joey Carberry has been a great game manager. Can't forget his performance against Gloucester at Kingsholm in Pool 2. And Noble Rugby says Dave Kilcoyne, otherwise known as Killer. You can get involved with the Heineken Champions Cup on social media. It's at Champions Cup. Search for European Rugby Champions Cup on Facebook and at European Rugby Champions Cup on Instagram.
You're listening to the Champions Rugby Show, the official European Rugby podcast.
Next Sunday, the 21st of April at the Aviva in Dublin for Leinster against Toulouse. Fellas, these two have played each other twice this season. Both have won and lost. Tom May, where's this one going to end up?
I am going to go for a Leinster win. I think Toulouse are playing some pretty good rugby. They had a great game this weekend against Clermont. But I just think Leinster are mentally slightly stronger than the French team at the moment.
But they were off colour against Ulster, weren't they? Does that count for anything?
I think it probably does, but I think it works the other way and it'll probably sort of make them tighten up their preparations for this game. I think they've probably got a number on this Toulouse lot. I know they're sort of one all in the amount of times they've played each other, but I think Leinster, at this stage of the competition, they've got too much.
George, what do you make of it?
Yeah, unfortunately, I've got to agree with Maisie. I think Leinster are just the better team, to be perfectly honest. And I said this earlier in the show, that they play really well as a unit and as forwards and backs as well. Toulouse, I mean, they're playing some cracking rugby. They're like the old Toulouse have come back to life again. You know, they've got forwards who can, you know, eat nails, and they've got backs who can score tries everywhere. It's just a really, really good French team to watch, which we haven't seen for quite a while. I mean, Racing have been up there and about, there and there and about, since the same sort of style of rugby. But Toulouse, this is the way Toulouse played when they won all those Brenner's trophies and in the European Cup. So, but I do think Leinster just got they've got the whole package again. Their forwards they'll win a lot of ball. They'll probably, they're more than good enough in the scrum. Toulouse aren't a great scrummaging side, funnily enough, I don't think. And I think with Sexton probably pulling, I assume Sexton's going to be fit, pulling the strings. I just think they've got a bit too much nous and a bit too much quality about them.
And just on the pack, you alluded to it there for the game they played at the RDS. I think the Toulouse pack was 950 kg.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
But they just put Leinster, just move them around. Yeah, I mean, what lessons do you think they can learn from that? Because if they go big,
yeah,
they're just going to tire them out, aren't they?
It takes more than being big. We saw this in the Six Nations when the French played England in the first game. They had a pack of 980 kilos. And they were terrible. They were out scrummaged, they were out mauled, they were obviously running around the field as well. Being big doesn't make you good, unfortunately. And particularly in this sort of the weather now, the way teams play, you can't just sort of grind a game down with your eight forwards. We spoke about that earlier in the show. You've got to have more strings to your bow. But having said that, the Toulouse, they are big, but they are pretty mobile. They do play a good offloading game.
But is it partly because the French sides just don't play enough intense matches against sides like a Leinster, for instance, in the top 14? Have they been challenged enough, Tom?
I don't necessarily agree with that, because I think the French bring intensity to any game they play in, just because of the way they're so confrontational as individuals.
Fitness wise, maybe not.
That's probably one area that they're looking to try and expose in terms of a weakness in that Toulouse game. But if you look across the board, across the top 14, and the way that Toulouse play, you'd probably say actually they're probably one of the fitter teams.
Yeah,
and alluding to George's point, you know, they've made 105 offloads to date. And you mentioned earlier on about the beating the most defenders. They've got Cheslin Kolbe, who is an absolute freak. 45 defenders beaten. Get the ball in his hands. Get the ball in Gatun's hands. Dupont's going to have a massive game for them, because I think he makes them tick. The interlink between him and the backs and the forwards, I think, is really important. And the balance there is key.
But have Toulouse played a side who are just as relentless? You know, when Leinster, you can imagine the situation, can't you? The Aviva's going to be rocking.
Clermont and, last weekend.
Well, yeah, that in a sense, that's probably the best warm-up act they could have had.
Well, that it'd be interesting to see what George thinks on this. It could work either way. Either you're fully primed for a game like Leinster, or 47-44, you come out on top. It's end-to-end stuff. They've battered each other, and that's the worst preparation you can have, because Leinster are suddenly thinking, let's start moving these around.
Yeah, I probably would agree with that. I've not seen the teams for the Pro 14 this weekend, but I guess Leinster wouldn't have played most of their frontline players, so they'll be relatively fresh. As Tom says there, Toulouse might be a little bit weary. But I mean, I agree with you, James. There's no... I've not played in France. Tom will know more about it than me, but the French top 14, it's not very... it's very attritional. It's not actually really about the sort of disciplined approach and sort of methodically making your way down the field, which is the way Leinster can play. I think it's quite tough when you switch between those sort of competitions, that actually getting yourself played in, if to use a cricket term, because you're playing against Clermont one week and you flink, the ball's being flung around, the crowd's going bananas, all this sort of stuff, and then next week you're playing against a much more efficient machine in Leinster, who can actually control a game at their pace, if you like. I think actually sort of flip-flopping between the two would be quite a challenge for Toulouse.
And I think if you look at the teams that are left, Saracens, Munster and Leinster, they've probably got the most structure out of all of the teams that have played in the competition. And you look at Toulouse and you think, well, they've probably got a few systems, but they largely rely on how good those individuals are. You know, they just want to play.
Mm. And this competition's been brilliant for building their confidence. And we talked about Freddie Burns dropping the ball earlier, but if he hadn't, this could have been a completely different tournament for Toulouse.
Yeah, I mean,
I know there's loads of ifs, buts and maybes.
But I also think there are probably moments like that in every Challenge Cup or every Champions Cup each season. You go, that was that one point that made a difference. And you do get that sort of on a micro basis in each game, where momentum swings in favour of one team or another. But you also get it across a pool.
Well, let's speak to the former Ireland hooker, Bernard Jackman, who won the European Cup with Leinster in 2009. He's also coached in the top 14. Bernard, great to have you on the pod.
Thank you very much.
How do you see this one then, Bernard? Because it's going to be a fascinating encounter. These two guys here kind of favouriting Leinster at the moment. Do Toulouse have enough in the locker?
Yeah, I think it's a dangerous game for Leinster. I just watched Toulouse Clermont game today, a crazy game. They came out on top of it. They'll be hoping that there's no sightings this week. Joe Tacori got sin-binned near the end, and he'd be a bit of a loss. Whether he starts or comes off the bench, he's a really impactful player. I thought the intensity of that game was very high, and you know, it's a short turnaround for them compared to Leinster, having obviously played them a day earlier, and being at home makes it a lot easier. But I think Leinster will be a little bit worried about their form. You know, they got beaten by Glasgow, draw with Treviso. I know it was a second/third-string Leinster team, but they weren't brilliant against Ulster either. And that's always a difficulty for Leinster and Munster, particularly, who produced so many players for Ireland. If they come back out of the Six Nations a little bit under out of form, it's very hard to get them up to speed quickly. So definitely Leo Cullen and Stuart Lancaster will be a little bit apprehensive going into this week, given how good Toulouse have been and just how little time they've probably had with the Leinster first team.
Bernard, given that Leinster and Munster, that their focus is purely on Europe, really, and they play their strongest teams in this competition, at this stage of the year, for them to be chopping and changing between domestic competition and European competition, does that make it harder? Because they want to rest these players, whereas you look at other teams, look at Toulouse, for example, every single player that played in that game against Clermont will probably be lining up against Leinster next weekend.
Yeah, I think it's very difficult. I think if you look at Edinburgh, for example, made a quarterfinal for the first time in a while. And in the Guinness Pro 14 games, just before their quarterfinal against Munster, Richard Cockle had no hesitation. He put all his Scottish players back in to try and get that cohesion into the team quickly and to give them every chance. Whereas, you know, Leinster had some of their internationals down in Dubai or are looking for a bit of sun somewhere because that's the player management program and there's a certain amount of games they can play and likewise a certain amount of games they can't. So I think it's a very difficult job for Leo Cullen and Lancaster to try and manage that. Having said that, they know what it's like because they've done it for the last 15 years and they are quite adept at actually getting those players, you know, on the same page quickly. But it's a fine art and it's an inexact science, you know, and I definitely, from a playing point of view, I'd rather be playing with the same players or the majority of the same players 2 or 3 weeks from a big game because when it comes to the quality of semi-final rugby and the four teams that are left, you know, if you're just a little bit off, you know, you're going to come unstuck and there's no second chance. So it's definitely not ideal, but it's the way the Irish model works and it generally, I suppose, gets the Irish provinces to be, you know, reasonably successful at getting into the latter stages and winning it. So I don't think we can really complain about the system because it has served us well.
Bernard, we were just talking earlier here about the Toulouse pack currently weighing in at about 950 kilos, we think. Having coached in the top 14, what sort of approach do you take into when you're facing a team like that who've got such a big pack? Do you move them around or do you say, actually, let's try and take them on and see what they've got?
Yeah, listen, I think, to be honest, you would with some of the... like. When some of the other teams, like Breed, who had a massive pack, and, you know, some of the teams who probably just play to stay up, or even Cast used to be quite like that, where, you know, they were happy just to kind of limp into the top six. So they probably weren't as fit or as capable of playing, you know, high-intensity rugby, which I think now has changed a little bit in France. I think, you know, a lot of teams have learned from Clermont and how they prepare. And I think this Toulouse team, even though they're massive, they actually are... fitter than they actually probably look. They genuinely are. And I mean, you know, they beat Leinster in a pretty high ball and play game in the group stages. And even though Leinster beat them in the RDS, I mean, they had to work really hard for, you know, I thought their fitness levels against Racing when they only had 14 men for, you know, for a long period and they were able to stay in the game. So I think it's not really an issue. I think what Leinster will try and do is, you know, they'll try and keep the ball from them and Leinster are generally very good at that, being able to recycle the ball. And they made Glasgow make over 300 tackles this weekend. The worrying thing is doing it one line break, but I think that if you can make Toulouse make 300 tackles, you'll get so many penalties that, you know, that you'll turn into points that you can win the game because they won't like defending multiple phases. I think their discipline will crack. I think that's something that, you know, that Leinster have in their locker that will be well suited to playing a team like Toulouse, who kind of feed off quite chaotic and a lot of transition and a lot of turnover ball.
And just finally, Bernard, can I talk to you about Sexton? Because Leo Cullen says he's good to go, but the point about Johnny Sexton is he hasn't really been good to go in terms of match performances. Really, very off Six Nations, kind of been in and out of form. He's kind of right for picking here, Johnny Sexton, isn't he? He needs a big game to get back into good nick.
Yeah, listen, it's a far from ideal preparation for him because, you know, he got injured against Munster in December and then his first game back was international rugby and I think himself and Conor Murray probably struggled to impose themselves to the level that they had in 2018. Now, I think the forwards were badly beaten up in the Six Nations. The Irish pack didn't provide you know, quality ball from set piece or phase play. So it was harder for them than normal, but they definitely weren't at the level they were at. And since then,
you know, he was named to play against Ulster, but pulled out the, you know, the morning of the match. So he's had a very disrupted preparation time. But having said that, I think he'd be absolutely raring to go in terms of saying, listen, if I can have a massive game in a European semi-final, it changed the whole perception around my form and kick on. So I think that the lucky thing for him is that he's come back to a province who are probably going to be in, hopefully, in playing for two trophies. And, you know, he can use those big games to get his rhythm and get himself back to the level he's capable of. And that'll be really important for Leinster. It'll be really important for Ireland, obviously, you know, with the World Cup coming at the end of the summer. You know, Ireland need Johnny Sexton firing on all cylinders.
Bernard, great to have you on the pod. Thanks very much indeed. Enjoy the weekend.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bernard Jackman there, who's obviously got big coaching pedigree. Fellas, just on Sexton. I mean, Ross Byrne's been playing brilliantly and deputising and did a terrific job in the dying stages against Ulster. But how badly do Leinster need a fit and firing Johnny Sexton?
I think any team would want to have Johnny Sexton playing for them if he's fit. But you can't have someone that's you know, either undercooked or is at 80% of their capacity, because I think that affects you mentally as well as physically. And then when you've got someone like Ross Byrne, who, you know, all the bottle that he showed in the quarterfinals, it's quite tough then to turn around to a player like that and go, well, at 80% or 75%, he's still better than you. Mm. You know, what message does that give out? And so I think it's a very delicate situation. If he's fit, he's fit, and he has to play because he's brilliant.
Have you ever had a situation like that as a player, George, when
being compared to Johnny Sexton? Strangely enough, no.
But my obviously in the Leicester days, there have been players who have been the stand-up performers, the regulars, the big names, and yet there's a bunch waiting to take their place who want to have an opportunity like a semi-final.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Mason makes a really good point there. What does it do to the sort of squad morale if you just airdrop these? I know he's a World Player of the Year and all that, and he's obviously a fantastic player, but it doesn't send a great message, I don't think. And I know it's a big game, I know it's a semi-final, but if he's 75% fit, you're much better off starting Ross Byrne, I think, just because he's on form. He's not your best fly half, obviously, because you've got one of the world's best in your ranks, but he's your best fly half this week because he's 100% fit, I think. And yeah, the decision's not mine, fortunately. It's Leo Cullen and Stu Lancaster got to make those decisions. But I guess a lot of it depends on how he's getting in training. If he actually is 75%, or actually is he 90%.
But he'll also be chomping at the bit to get back, won't he? So you've got Johnny Sexton knocking on your door, ringing you up, and saying, "Why aren't you starting me?
To be a coaching or selection issue here, which would be interesting to pick George's brain on, because you can also say, right, well, let's start with Sexton, because if he breaks down and he started, at least we've got Ross Byrne to go to. Whereas if you start Ross Byrne and then you bring on Sexton with 60 to go and he lasts 3 minutes,
you are stuck.
Yeah. Then what do you do? So then you've also got an argument to say, well, even if he's not fit, we still should start him, because, you know, if he does break down, then we can bring on someone that's firing on all cylinders.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good point, and probably the best way to do it, yeah. Again, we don't know the full extent of his injury. He might be at 90-95%, and I think in that situation, then you've got to pick him. But as Jacko said there on the phone, his first game back after injury was England-Ireland, I think it was, certainly one of the internationals in the Six Nations. That's not really a great way to ease yourself back in. No. I don't care who you are, I don't care which player in history. There's very few players can come back from long-term injury and pick up where they left off.
We've been asking on social media who's been your unsung hero for your team in the Heineken Champions Cup this season and why. A lot of votes here for Ross Byrne. Colin Campbell, who's got in touch, he said played great against Toulouse. Sean McAvoy as well. Ross Byrne for me, he says solid every game.
And then Ross Byrne's been in.
He's been in touch. But obviously that penalty was huge when he was injured. He was hobbling, wasn't he? Chris Monaghan as well, thanks very much for getting in touch. Meanwhile, for Toulouse, Ruben and Luke on Instagram both said Cheslin Kolbe, and Mehdi thinks that Sofiane Gatun, and both of those, Tom, have just been
not really unsung.
Yeah, unsung.
They're not sung a lot.
They're not unsung, but I mean, for Kolbe, he has been one of those players who likes to get his hands on the ball. He's not one of these wingers who stays out there, is he? He's a bit like Chris Ashton in that sense.
Yeah, what's brilliant about Cheslin Kolbe is A, he's shorter than me, but also he's quite capable of taking on players that are double his height. And he loves it.
Yeah.
You know, he's strong. We've seen him knock off two defenders in the Wasps game, I think. Just shrugged them off and went the length. He can embarrass people with his footwork. He is a pleasure to watch.
Let's have a chat with our old friend Florent Rossonnier. Then he's on the line. He's on the line. Where are you, Florent?
Well, I'm actually I'm doing a coaching academy for Philippe Saint-André. Philippe has created those academy around the world, and he's got about 10 around the world, and sometimes he invites guest coaches. And we are actually in the French Martinique in the middle of the Caribbean. I'm calling from...
strategically picked that one, did you?
I'm calling from La Anse Noire, which is a little bit where, you know, I can see a lot of boats, a lot of people in the water, turtles, you know, the lot. So it's quite nice. You know, it's a day off. It's Sunday.
But you can't stare across the table at James Burridge, who's the winner.
And you
there.
Can't look at the unkempt and unshaven Thomas May.
And wearing Uxbridge.
Yeah, well, you know, I gave you Toulouse. I gave you the Toulouse game.
Well,
know?
We just talked about that, actually. George and I were just saying, well, if you turn down points at goal, what do you expect, mate?
Yeah, well, you know.
Florent, in all seriousness, can I talk to you about Racing? Because that's a massive blow for them, isn't it? For everyone at Racing, for everything they've produced off the pitch, how much of a killer is that?
Well, I think, you know, I've said it for a few times now, and I keep saying, I don't think Racing know how to win. I mean, they got better this year, and I think the head-up of a couple of players like Russell and Rambo have brought some more freedom of play for them, but they still haven't mastered the art of winning games, closing games. And Toulouse go down with one man. You've got to play rugby. You can't play that, you know, that silly game of giving them the ball back, of big kicking. And those guys are actually, you know, the best in the business in France at the moment to draw attack from. And, you know, I think Racing have just lost the plot, I think, because, you know, they've got everything. They've got the squad. I think they've got the structure and the infrastructure, and everything is absolutely there for them, but they don't seem to go to the next level. So it's a bit of a disappointment for me. It's my club. You know, I told you that day, I said, you know, I pick Racing, but I still think Toulouse got more than people think, and they've been playing so well this season. You know, it's going to be a tough one next week, obviously, in Ireland, but I'm sure they'll do a job. They'll try to do a job. It might be a bit far for them, actually, because I feel like, you know, the home advantages will be quite strong.
Well, it's George Shooter here, mate. I'm just looking at Toulouse, and they remind me of the Toulouse of sort of the mid-90s, back when I was started playing against them. They're really big, horrible pack, and some fantastically electric backs. What do you make of their current sort of setup, current squad and style of play?
Well, it's actually what we're talking about. I think, you know, I mean, I played them a little bit earlier than you. I remember that generation, Kenya, and, you know, and Tamak, the father, not the son, you know, Casalbu, all those players. I mean, they had that really strong philosophy about, you know, probably a very modern philosophy of rugby to play standing up, you know, trying to open space for players around them. And with the new team in place around the club, I'm not just talking about on the pitch, but around the club, when you look at who is in the committee, who is in charge at the moment of the club, it's Lacroix, it's Thomas Castagnet, it's Toulouse, all those guys are now running the club.
Yeah.
And you find on the pitch that the guys who are running, you know, the team on a daily basis are guys of that generation as well. Mm. So I think, you know, it's where they have been in the past, but they're coming back to it because I think they reconnect with their own philosophy. And also, you know, Toulouse is strong on that philosophy because they're still homegrown players, you know, from the club. You know, kids have a rare chance when you join Toulouse when you're 15, 16 to come through the system and get your chance at first team. So that's probably a guarantee for that philosophy as well. Mm.
Flo, what do you reckon about the Challenge Cup? Clermont are absolutely flying at the moment. Clearly, they lost against Toulouse this weekend, but they're coming up against Harlequins. And then La Rochelle as well, who stuck 70 points on Pau this weekend. Yeah, they come up against Sale. Do you think that's going to be an all-French final?
I think it could be. I think Clermont, man. I mean, I would have picked them from the start. I think they're playing some good rugby. They're probably... you know, last year we said they had a bad season. They didn't qualify for Europe, but they're top three team in France, and they show it week in, week out. And okay, last week, this weekend against Toulouse, I think probably a bit of a resting players, you know, try a bit of a change, etc. But they're going to be there. And La Rochelle, you know, they seem to have reborn a little bit. You know, the La Rochelle renewed about a year and a half, and they seem to have found that form again. Paul make them look good because Paul was a bit. I watched the game actually yesterday in
a bar
from your sun lounger. Yeah.
In a clubhouse made of, you know, cute tall and they still had Canal Plus and we could watch the game, so we watched it. But Paul did look like they didn't really know what they were doing at the moment. I think they're in a chase for something else. They weren't concentrating. And but to be fair, La Rochelle playing that kind of rugby back to where they were. I've been very good. Oh, I was just saying, I've got Philippe actually. Would you like to have a few words with Philippe?
Oh wow!
He's just coming. As I found him, Philippe.
This is brilliant.
I know it sounds.
Listen,
funny,
it all comes down to logistics and planning.
Yeah,
it's great planning actually. So I'm going to put you on to Philippe. But you know, I think we're going to see a great weekend of rugby, and I think Saracens, you know, at home against Munster will do it. And I'm afraid to say that Leinster will have the upper hand. You know, they've got Turner and they've got Henshaw coming back in this weekend. So I think that'll be my pick for the final.
Good man,
Flo. Philippe now, okay?
She's down in his beer.
Yeah.
Hello?
Philippe.
Hiya.
Philippe, hello. It's James Burridge, Tom May and George Shooter in the studio here in sunny Uxbridge.
Hello. Good evening for you.
Good evening. We'll have a bash. The line's not great, but we'll have a bash.
We have a tough life, you know?
Yes, I know. I'm glad you got your priorities right, Philippe, first of all. I know the line's not great, but just on Toulouse, what do you make of their comeback? Because they have come back and they are truly delivering in Europe once again.
Their development, their academy, create good players like Ntamack. And they are back to a game, or they play a quick game, they offload a lot, they try to pass, to move the ball a lot. And they are quite very impressive. So in the beginning of the season, we say, yeah, they are good, but they would have not enough depth. And they showed, you know, that everybody was wrong. You know, during the Six Nations, 8 guys was in the French team, but they were carry on to beat the other team with players under 20, under 21. Few players won the World Cup under 20. And what's great is that they show character and they play a great game of rugby. So, you know, for people love Toulouse or love rugby, it's great to see Toulouse back in the top of the top 14 and in the semi-final of the European Cup, you know, Champions Cup.
And Philippe, who do you think are the players that really have to stand up for Toulouse this weekend if they've got any chance of beating Leinster?
To be honest, I would say all, you know, because to beat Leinster away, it's a huge challenge. And but you know, if they front up, if they have a great discipline, and they don't need too many balls, you know, because they have so much talent with the backs. But I think guys like Ramos, Ntamack, Uge, Meda, all these guys, you know, they're in good form at the moment. But we speak a lot about the backs, but I think the front five of Stade Toulouse is quite impressive. You know, they are good in set piece, they're good in scrum, they win their ball in line-out, and they stick together in defense. So I think it's a great team, but to beat Leinster in semi-final away, you know, they will need to be not great, they will need to be brilliant.
Philippe, wonderful to get your views ahead of the weekend. Go back to the bar, and hopefully by this stage, Florent would have paid his share. And that laugh indicates it's absolutely true. Philippe, merci beaucoup, bon weekend.
Thank you very much. Bye bye.
Ciao.
Bye bye.
Philippe Saint-André and Florent Roussigneux, the French double act tearing up the Caribbean.
That was brilliant. That was great.
So, Saturday, the 21st of April, 15:15 BST for Leinster against Toulouse at the Aviva Dublin on Virgin Media, Channel 4, BT Sport, FR Dirt, and BN Sports. Guys, you've said already that you think Leinster are going to win this one, but how tight, Tom? Do you think it's Leinster is going to come out this one steamrolling, or do you think it could come down to something magic in the last few minutes?
I think it could come down to fine margins. Really interesting what Philippe said there, that they don't need much ball to still be able to win. If they all perform, they're very good at taking their opportunities to lose. So I think it's going to be close. I just think Leinster, they've got enough to get over the line.
George?
Yeah, I agree. I did back Leinster earlier, and I just do think they're just a better team, probably more suited to the semi-final right now. I do love the way Toulouse. I love watching Toulouse. I think they've had a fantastic season. They're still going to be in with a shout for the French top 14. But I just don't. I think when you get to semi-finals like this, you need to be a little bit more pragmatic than these guys are at the moment.
By the way, the all-time aggregate attendance for the European Cup will pass 20 million fans with this second semi-final. Keep checking HeinekenChampionsCup.com and the competition's social media channels for the latest about Heineken Champions Cup final tickets. Allocations are being held for supporters of the two clubs that will contest the final in Newcastle. A limited number of tickets may also come back onto public sale. But if you want to be at finals weekend in Newcastle, you can get tickets now for the European Rugby Challenge Cup final, and we'll talk about that competition next.
You're listening to the Champions Rugby Show.
So, Saturday, the 20th of April, 17:30 BST for La Rochelle against Sale Sharks at Stade Marcel Defendre on BN Sports and BT Sport. We've already alluded to it, Tom and George, La Rochelle flying really at the moment. They've got some decent form. They're putting sides away. Let's imagine we're Steve Diamond. How do you try and
off
stop
the back
them?
Of his weekend.
Off the back of his defeat, obviously, to Worcester. How are you going to stop La Rochelle scoring with such freedom, George?
Tackle them. Simple. No, I think actually Sale's defence, apart from this weekend, obviously, has been pretty good. Very, very solid. They do. Steve Diamond, love him or hate him, he can certainly get a team to play for each other and play for him. So their spirit's been great, and that shows up in their defence. I think yesterday was a bit of a blip, and he, if you saw him on the TV afterwards, he was not best pleased, and I guess he had a few choice words for him afterwards. But I don't think they'll play that badly 2 weeks in a row. I genuinely think Sale are a very good team. I think whether they can beat La Rochelle or not, I've not seen a lot of La Rochelle. I have to confess, you know what you're going to get with them. You get the big pack. You get the backs who can score tries. I think it's a decent matchup for Sale. I have to say. Whether they've quite got enough in it and they're still fighting on the premiership front, maybe that will detract from them a bit. I don't know. Probably La Rochelle will be marginal favourites, but I certainly wouldn't write Sale off at all.
Tom, last season La Rochelle were the darlings, weren't they, of the tournament? And then they kind of fell off the pace in the quarters, didn't they, at Scarlets? So what of La Rochelle now then, Tom? Because they are impressing massively domestically. Could they go and win this thing? If Clermont got to the final, could they beat a Clermont?
I think they can. I think they'll find it difficult. I actually think these two French teams will get through this weekend. I think that Clermont, since the debacle that was last season for them, they started as if they were meant business from moment one. They haven't shied away from attacking this Challenge Cup, which is great to see. And the two games against Northampton were amazing. Yeah, 80-point jobs, right, both of them. So, you know, I think Sale haven't been great on the road, certainly domestically. And I think to travel to La Rochelle is going to be tough for them, especially with La Rochelle having thumped Po, as we talked about. They stuck 70 points on them, and they're at Po have got some decent players as well. So I think that might be an issue for Sale this weekend.
Saturday the 20th of April at 20:00 hours BST for Clermont against Harlequins at the Stade Marcel Michelin on FR4, BN Sports and BT Sport. Do you give Quins any hope, George?
No. I've played at Clermont a few times.
What's it like?
Amazing. It's one of the best atmospheres I think I've ever played in, including test matches and things like that. Yeah, the ground, the Clermont, the city, I think it's got about 30,000 people, all employed by Michelin, and 15,000 of them are crammed into the stadium. We won there 1 year, by quite comfortably actually in Europe, but other times we've come unstuck there. It's just such a... They've gone, I think, three or four times, they've gone 50 or 60 games unbeaten there. They just don't lose at home. As May said, they're a very good team as well at the moment, and they certainly have rebounded very well from last year. Quins are a good side as well. They're not completely writing them off.
What can they learn from Northampton's visits there recently?
Well, very don't ship 80 points. It's probably the best way. Again, as you said with Saracens, these guys are beatable. Yeah, but you've got to be on your game. You've got to play your best game. You've got to get everyone firing 100%, and then you've got to rely on a little bit of luck and mistakes from the home team. But like I say, just history tells you that that's one of the hardest places to go for an away team and win in any competition, and I don't see it being much different this weekend.
I don't think you can go there and grind out a win. I think you've got to just attack them and just go, right, this is going to be quite high scoring. And at some point, we've got to pull off some defensive moments of brilliance, which Northampton...
But Northampton tried that twice.
Well, yeah, but Naivora had an absolute stinker on the left wing.
Their defence was pretty suspect.
Yeah, so if they tightened just one or two of those areas up and sort of kept Clermont at bay for one or two more phases, I think they would have nicked one. But the likes of Parra and Laidlaw that sort of run the systems of that team, and then you've got the likes of Beetham, who runs them in for fun, Nakaleva in the midfield, Pasiliato. Now, he was big last year and good. He is enormous this year and very, very good. Yeah, he's a beast. Yeah. You know, and then you've got, at the moment, they're struggling around at 10. They've got Lopez that's injured and Fernandez that's been injured. And Nanai Williams is playing 10, which adds a completely different attacking aspect to their game.
Can't kick, can he?
doesn't need to, does it?
Just gives it to Nakaleva. So I think this is a really difficult ask for Quinns this weekend. But they've just got to chuck everything at it and see if they can get something to stick.
Now, for all the latest on this competition, follow at ER Challenge Cup on Twitter. Go to the European Rugby Challenge Cup page on Facebook. Now, one other thing to tell you about, EPCR and Raging Bulls Sportswear have teamed up to raise money for the My Name's Dolly Foundation, which aids research into the causes of motor neurone disease and to investigate potential cures. The former Newcastle Falcons lock Dolly Weir, OBE, formed the charity after being diagnosed with MND in 2017. You can pledge your support by getting one of the My Name's Dolly's Foundation's polo shirts, which cost £40, with all proceeds going to the charity. Check out the website, ragingbullsportswear.com/MND.
Go to HeinekenChampionsCup.com to play Champions Fantasy Rugby.
Right, let's check our fantasy rugby performance. Tom, you've been changing players and positions for the last few hours. Are you confident you've got a team that can beat me in this semi-final stage?
Yeah.
Well, tell us what you've been doing then.
I've made my full five free transfers because half my team wouldn't be playing otherwise.
Yep.
Owen Farrell got me 0 points last time.
Because his wife was in labour.
But I hope that doesn't happen this time around. Yeah, I mean, please. And then Niall Scannell, I brought in at hooker. James Ryan, who is outstanding in the quarterfinals, 27 tackles. Yep. I brought him in. I've got Jerome Kaino and Choisnou. He needs to go because he's probably not going to be playing. Gary Ringrose and Cheslin Colby, Gittoon and Lama in my back three.
It's a very good back line. It's your tactics of paying the pack absolute peanuts, but giving your back line loads of money is obviously the way to do it.
And as you've seen on this screen here,
you're going to play triple.
Yeah, so you better watch
points.
Out.
I played that. So this has got to be a comeback of epic proportions because you're so far behind.
This weekend is my weekend, James.
Well, I've still got time to think. I've got to work out whether to drop Strattle because Strattle is on the wing at the moment. And
I don't think you should.
Well, because you don't want to lose the points. But he's been... I mean, actually, for Mark McCall, he's got an embarrassment of riches, hasn't he? Because, you know, David Strettle's been scoring tries for fun.
Yeah.
But actually, look at his back three.
You'd think they go Williams, Good, and Maitland. And that's a pretty upset.
Strettle on the bench, though, wouldn't it? At least...
You definitely have him on the bench. So. Yeah. Hopefully he'll come on after 5 minutes and score a hat-trick. Right, you can check out all the details at HeinekenChampionsCup.com and get your team sorted ahead of the last four. There's also daily fantasy rugby where you can choose a team of players who are in action on one specific match day, something worth getting involved with right now on the website. Now, a quick reminder to cast your vote for the EPCR European Player of the Year. The 15 nominees are starting with Racing 92, Leone Nakarawa, last season's winner, Finn Russell and Simon Zebo, Saracens, Alex Good and Mako Vunipola, Toulouse, Antoine Dupont and Cheslin Kolbe, Edinburgh Rugby, Villiamé Mata, Leinster, Sean Cronin, Tyde Furlong and Gary Ringrose, Ulster, Jacob Stockdale, and Munster, Ty Byrne, Joey Carberry, and Peter O'Mahony. George, that's an epic list of players. Who do you think has been standing out so far?
I think my eye goes straight down to Peter O'Mahony, to be honest. I'm a massive fan of his. And he's perhaps, again, like some of the other Irish guys, not been at his very, very best. But whenever Munster pulls something out of the bag and win games, he's always at the eye of the storm. And he's a great leader. He's an excellent player in his own right, and scrum, sorry, line out, breakdown, he's fantastic. I mean, it's a hell of a list. I don't know if he'd be top of that, but he's certainly someone that that I really enjoy watching, that's for sure.
Now, the long list will be reduced to 5 players following semi-finals weekend by a combination of your votes and the verdict of the esteemed judges. Players who have made a significant impact in the quarters or semis can still be considered for the shortlist. The winner, who will receive the Anthony Foley Memorial Trophy, will be announced following the Heineken Champions Cup final at St James's Park on Saturday, the 11th of May. Vote now at HeinekenChampionsCup.com and you'll be in the running to win 2 VIP tickets to the final in Newcastle with 1 night's accommodation courtesy of EPCR. The winner will be pitch side for the presentation. Now, if you can't be at a semi-final, don't forget to watch the Heineken Champions Cup live on TV this weekend. All the matches are on BT Sport in the UK and Ireland. beIN Sports is the home of the Champions Cup in France, while FR Dur also have the Leinster-Toulouse match. Channel 4 in the UK and Virgin Media in Ireland are showing Leinster-Toulouse as well on free-to-air television. And in the US, you can watch all of the Heineken Champions Cup matches on the NBC Sports Gold platform. Fellas, these 2 big semi-finals coming up, which one player do you think is going to have the influence necessary, George?
I'm going to go for Owen Farrell. I'd love to see an English team in the final, and he's what makes Saracens tick. Assume he's not having another baby this weekend, Maisie, to mess up your plans. But he's a key player for Saracens. Not been at the top of his game, perhaps, in recent months, weeks. But if Saracens are going to win, he's going to be pulling the strings.
Tom?
I think he'd be one of the players I would have gone for. I'm going to say, if Toulouse have a chance, Antoine Dupont has to have an absolutely outstanding game.
Well, he's been absolutely fabulous all season, hasn't he? But you're absolutely right. They need their big game players to deliver.
Yeah, I think him combined with the sort of other stellar names that they've got, they have to put their hands up. But he's really key to that.
Fellas, thanks very much for your company. That's all we've got time for on the Champions Rugby Show. Thanks to all our guests. We'll be back ahead of finals weekend. But until then, stay up to date on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. Plus, visit HeinekenChampionsCup.com for Champions Fantasy Rugby and all the best European rugby content. But for now, from Tom May, George Shooter and myself, James Burridge, it's goodbye.